Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 27, 2018. A rebel commander is gunned down in Yei River State. And South Sudan's Catholic bishops say the nation's leaders have failed their people.
More than 40 years of war, tens of thousands of deaths, millions of people displaced, looting, rape, hunger, economic collapse.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A rebel commander allied to former first vice president Riek Machar was killed in clashes with government troops in Yei River State on Monday. A rebel spokesman says the base commander for Nyakone base was killed when government troops attacked the area. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei.
Colonel Lampol Gabriel, the deputy military spokesman of the SPLA-IO, says, according to the rebels allied to Riek Machar, government forces attacked their defensive positions yesterday, leading to clashes that lasted several hours.
The government forces, they attacked our base from Yei. That is about 5 miles on Yei Maridi Road. And they kill our major. It's called Felix Dikambo Ortino. And wounded one soldier. They are civilians in our area of control. With the fight continued up to the area. The SPLA-IO is committed to the cessation of hostilities agreement that was signed last year. And hopefully, we are ready to bring the peace to the country, especially in the whole of the people of the area, but the whole of the country people are suffering. So, we are ready to bring the peace back home.
Government military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Rai Kong denies government forces attacked rebel positions and claims the fighting was actually between rival opposition forces operating in the area.
There was no engagement between SPLA forces and different rebel groups. The reports we have been getting for the last 3 weeks are indicating that there had been a lot of fighting between different rebel groups, those loyal to Thomas Cirillo and the other loyal to Riek Machar. The other thing is that the rebels, all these different groups of rebels have been encroaching on our military outposts in all directions, and they are really getting very close to our defensive position.
Kwang also says his forces are committed to the secession agreement. Bishop Hilary Loate Adeba of Yei Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan confirms fighting occurred on the outskirts of Yei town, an area that has been relatively calm and stable for the last few months. But he says it is not clear who started the fighting.
We were very shocked, we were very sorry that the violation of the cessation of hostilities in Yei has been very, very clear. We've been hearing guns around, and the warring parties should observe the cessation of hostilities, because the people in the rural areas, they are very, very tired. They have been made to run from one place to another throughout the 4 years.
Article 2 of the cessation of hostilities agreement signed by the warring parties in December stipulates that each party shall implement the agreement in good faith and shall ensure that its affiliates and all forces or armed groups under its command and control at all times observe the agreement. Adeba says the civilians need peace so they can begin rebuilding their lives. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
Catholic bishops are criticizing South Sudan's leaders for failing to restore lasting peace in the country. The bishops said in a statement last week that they are joining the Vatican in praying and fasting for peace in South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo, but reiterated their call on the country's warring parties to silence the gun. The bishops say it is unacceptable for leaders in South Sudan to negotiate government positions while South Sudanese are dying. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
A South Sudanese choir sings songs of peace at St. Teresa Cathedral in Juba during Friday's prayer service. Pope Francis announced earlier this month he would pray for peace in South Sudan and the neighboring DRC. The day of prayer coincided with the end of three-day meeting of Catholic bishops in Juba when the bishops issued a strongly worded statement regarding the situation in South Sudan. Archbishop Paulino Lukuduloro of Juba Archdiocese criticized the government and the opposition for not putting the interests of South Sudanese people first.
We are dissatisfied that our leaders in both government and opposition have so far been unable to put their own interests aside and make peace for the good of the people of South Sudan. We fear that our leaders do not know how to make peace. They are confused. They are military people who see the world through the lens of violence. They need help, not so much with the technical and political details, but with the spiritual and moral courage to make peace.
Archbishop Lukudu says South Sudan's leaders have failed their people.
More than 4 years of war, tens of thousands of deaths, millions of people displaced, looting, rape, hunger, economic collapse, breakdown of the rule of law, destruction of the nation's infrastructure, children denied education, families denied health care. This represents failure.
The bishops urged the country's leaders to enter phase three of the IGAD high-level revitalization forum with a strong political will to bring peace to the country. If they do so, says Archbishop Lukudu, religious leaders will back them up 100%.
We, the Catholic bishops, pledge our full support for this process, which should include a spiritual retreat to be led by religious leaders from South Sudan and elsewhere. The theme of the retreat would not be political. It would be a healing retreat to bring about personal transformation, to prepare the participants to face the task of making peace.
He's speaking in Arabic. 70-year-old Lucia Kakuswaka, who attended Friday's prayer service, says she and other South Sudanese have suffered for far too long.
For so long, we have not experienced any peace in our lives. We were born in war, and we produce our children in war, and it is still continuing up to now. I don't know how is this going to end. My wish is that God to intervene and change the heart of our politicians so that they can bring peace for us. We are really tired.
For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Jonglei state officials say they will persecute those who spread hate messages through Facebook and Twitter. The governor of Jonglei state, Philip Aguer, says sons and daughters of the state are spreading hate speech through Facebook and Twitter, and it has contributed to violence in the state. Aguer says his office can work with the courts in Jonglei state to summon individuals inciting violence. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Governor Aguer says intercommunal violence in Jonglei state was caused by lies, and his speech is spread on social media.
Social media is a cause of a lot of conflict among the communities. And we warn all those who are using negatively the social media to stop inciting their people to kill themselves and stop spreading lies and news that are not real.
Recent clashes between the two clans of Bor South County in Jonglei State over a disputed land have left dozens of people dead. Conflict between the two communities first erupted on December 22nd, leaving 22 people dead, and this month, 15 people were killed. Dozens of others were injured in the two incidents. Governor Agur says he has a strong evidence that social media users instigated violence between the two communities in Vorsal.
When we went to these warring parties, one party cited the example of people talking against them in the social media, and they have mentioned names that now the other group have been chased away from the area and they are loitering in the bush. That is negative. Nobody has been chased away from the area. It is the government that have told the two communities to move away, not one side.
Majera Aliar, the acting commissioner for Borsalt County, also warned social media users against spreading messages of hate.
We know and we trace that those who are talking like that, those who are written in the internet like that, we are going to trace you through the social media, and then we will get you and you will be confined in the jail, so that you will be taken to the law, because you are the one who encouraged the fighting between the community. Please take your hand away from that.
Agur agrees that much of the hate speech is spread by South Sudanese in the diaspora is causing the violence.
We'll tell them they should be building peace among their people. They should be trying to bring people together, not encourage hatred, not carry out messages of hate. And the educated people were taken to school so that they learn good cultures, good practices, and they should practice good cultures among their own communities.
26-year-old Bo resident Joel Alier says he uses Facebook to chat with friends from different parts of the world. Alier agrees that people should use social media responsibly.
The main reason as to why I usually go on Facebook is basically with my friends abroad, in Uganda, others are in America, others are in Juba, discuss some issues, and mostly education issues, but not to incite things like wars and other things. But I have seen most of the people now are forcing different things which are contrary to what they are supposed to be doing.
30-year-old Bo resident Nial Johol says he too has seen people misuse social media.
I've been observing that many youth who have been to school, they are doing something contrary to what they brought from the school. They usually incite their communities, especially on Facebook. They bring some words that can encourage them to kill themselves. The knowledge that they acquired in the school is not for inciting wars among the communities. To do something good but not something bad to your communities.
Both Joel and Alier are calling on their fellow youth to refrain from inciting violence among their communities. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at newborn mortality rate in South Sudan. That story is after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help young people discover their talents and develop them?
I think that can be done like from an early stage. Most of us right now are suffering and struggling with things because our parents didn't take the chance of getting to know our talents when we were very young. Because if a kid is young, you can easily tell what he or she is interested in.
I encourage you on how to develop your talent. If there is a need for money, and if I have, obviously I can give you.
What I can do is to inspire that young person to continue with that talent. And to develop them is to make sure that I continue working with that person.
Well, to me, I cannot help them in discovering, but whoever discovers himself, I can help in developing. And he has the will to develop.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about the causes of high infant mortality rate in South Sudan. UNICEF says South Sudan is one of the countries with the highest newborn mortality rate in the world. A new report says one in every 26 children born in South Sudan die within the first month of birth. Nabil Biagio has details for VOA from Juba.
A health specialist with UNICEF in South Sudan says more than 80% of newborn deaths in South Sudan are due to complications during birth or infections such as pneumonia. Kamish Kenneth is maternal and newborn officer with UNICEF in South Sudan.
South Sudan ranks among the top 10 countries in Africa, especially Sub-Saharan Africa, where a lot of newborns die. Actually, they die before their first month.
Kenneth says most South Sudanese women in the remote parts of the country deliver at home with little medical assistance from a certified health worker. The report ranks South Sudan 7th among the 10 worst countries in Africa for newborn mortality, the rate of babies who die during delivery or within a month of delivery. The report says babies born in Japan, Iceland, and Singapore have the best chance at survival, while newborns in Pakistan, the Central African Republic, and Afghanistan face the worst odds. Janet Michael is the director of nursing and midwifery at South Sudan's Ministry of Health. She says, due to the ongoing conflict and economic hardships, most pregnant women cannot get enough food or access vaccines, prenatal care, or anti-malaria treatment.
In the current situation that we are in, of course, you find that a lot of mothers are malnourished, they're anemic. Then, of course, a couple of malaria, which actually, because the baby, the newborn, is affected. So any illnesses that the mother has also affects the newborn.
Michael says there is also an acute shortage of fully equipped medical facilities and qualified health workers to handle complicated pregnancies.
If that baby is born in a facility that has got the resources to offer care, then that baby is likely to survive. But if there is none, then you can't, the baby cannot survive. And the other, of course, baby which has been born with the difficulties in breathing, it also needs resuscitation. So you must have the personnel who is skilled, who know how to do resuscitation properly, and the equipment must be there. When these are not there, of course, we lose them.
The UNICEF report says war-affected areas such as the former Upper Nile, Unity, and Jonglei states have the highest mortality rate in the country. Kenneth says more than 80% of newborn deaths are due to complications during birth or infections such as pneumonia.
The major cause is newborns who are born premature, and those who have low birth weight, and also newborn who get infection. Another cause is things that are related to during the delivery, which is babies who are born and they cannot breathe well.
The UNICEF health officer says most of the birth-related complications are preventable.
We work through partners, we support partners to have in-service training the health workers who are at the moment working in health facilities to capacity build them. We capacity build them, we train them on how to deliver children and how to manage complications when they arise. And we also engage with communities and educate them.
Michael says certain cultural practices also prevent pregnant women from seeking medical attention or delivering their babies in a health facility.
We have the elder women telling this young woman, said, oh no, you don't need to go to a hospital. Those days I used to deliver at home. I never saw any doctor. So they discourage them from going to seek medical consultation.
Pregnant women are strongly advised to visit a health facility for prenatal care, where they can receive assistance from trained health workers. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Humanitarian system is strained as armed conflict and natural disasters have put an unprecedented amount of people around the world in need of assistance. With that in mind, a new initiative sponsored by the United States and the United Kingdom is looking for new ways to transform how humanitarians do their work. The Humanitarian Grant Challenge is looking for new approaches that translate into life-saving solutions. Ayen Deng Bior reports donors are rethinking how they spend money during humanitarian crisis.
When you think of new technologies or innovative solutions, you might immediately think of the field of medicine or engineering. But a new initiative called the Humanitarian Grant Challenge, a partnership between the UK and US governments, wants to attract people with new innovative solutions into the humanitarian field. Ambassador Mark Green, USAID administrator, who spoke at the Humanitarian Grand Challenge launch in London this week, says the United States alone spent $8 billion last year on humanitarian assistance, and 80% of that spending was in conflict zones.
And for all of that money that we spend, and we're proud to spend it because we believe that is our moral obligation, less than 1% of that money actually goes into innovations, into testing out ways to improve the delivery of services. And we simply believe that a truly compassionate nation, a truly compassionate people, our obligation is not only to provide assistance, but to do so in the most effective way possible, the most efficient way possible, and also at the same time to design local solutions that help communities and people withstand future shock.
In marrying the humanitarian response efforts with new technologies and better, more innovative solutions, humanitarians could reach more people and change more lives, says Penny Mordaunt, Secretary of State for International Development of the United Kingdom and keynote speaker at the launch. Mordaunt says she wants to know what the next big idea will be.
What will be the critical change to how we deliver humanitarian aid to the most vulnerable? Mobile technology has huge opportunities. For instance, data used to be collected laboriously by hand. Now it can be transmitted through mobile systems almost instantaneously. We supported at DFID a mobile app that allows household food security data to be collected from areas that we could not otherwise get to. And that tool has now been rolled out to 28 countries, including DRC, Yemen, and South Sudan.
Mordaunt adds the Humanitarian Grand Challenge is including the private sector as a way to attract a new set of skills and ideas while helping to increase the rate of progress, a move that Ambassador Green also welcomes.
For the longest time, we in the development community believed that we were the only ones entitled to move in these communities, that we were the source of all goodness and lifting lives. And then eventually we said, okay, we're not the only ones. You can join us if you give us money. Right. So we did work with the private sector, but only if we could get them to perform and dance exactly as we wanted. In this day and age, everything has changed. And we recognize that enterprise itself, the ingenuity, the spirit of innovation that it brings to projects and problems and solutions is a good unto itself.
Green says it's what makes technology work, not just the tool itself, but how that tool is applied, along with entrepreneurs who design solutions to long-standing problems. Green calls that a hopeful trend, something that should be embraced. Mordaunt agrees.
People move quicker than commissioners in government. Technology moves quicker than we can ever hope to keep up with. And so by changing that dialogue, by throwing problems out there, by asking for help and being explicit about it and building networks around that, which is, I think, it will be one of the effects of this, that will be game-changing.
Mordaunt says what's needed now are new answers and intelligent people who are focused on finding new solutions. The challenge calls on all donors, investors, and the private sector to submit ideas. Ayen Deng Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The Ituri region in the Democratic Republic of Congo has had a series of conflict dating back to decades. Recently, conflict largely between pastoralists and farmers has flared up again. VOA's Jeffrey Young discusses the situation with two relief workers in the troubled Ituri region.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's restless northeast Ituri region has since December erupted once again in major ethnic violence, and as a result, people are fleeing. The long-standing conflict pits the militias of the livestock-herding Himas against fighters for the farming Lendus. Each wants to control the land for their own way of life. Caught in the middle are hundreds of thousands of civilians, including a large number of children, as described via Skype by UNICEF DRC Director Yves Villemont.
So our estimates is that we have 110,000 people that are internally displaced within the province of Ituri, people that have fled from their communities and villages following the violence that their communities and villages have been facing.
Villemont says more than 66,000 children are part of that huge number, says that some people have moved to Ituri's capital, Bunia, while others have fled to Uganda. The impact of this renewed conflict on people in Ituri is described via Skype from Goma by relief NGO Solidarities International DRC country director Javier Loth.
From what we know, and we have not been able so far to access to all places of the big territory of Ituri. From what we know and what we have been able to access and to assess, the situation is dire for the people who have been displaced. We are talking about people indeed without shelter, people with no access to food, with no access to basic non-food items.
UNICEF's Villemont says that this inter-ethnic conflict has destroyed clinics and access to health services, and schools have also been impacted in several ways.
Education is being put under pressure in the sense that schools are being burned down and attacked, but also because schools are being used as places for displaced people to stay.
The DRC government and the UN force MONUSCO are working to stop the violence and enable relief to get to those impacted. But as Solidarity's Lauf points out, the country is currently facing multiple insurgencies, especially one in the southeast Kivu region, taxing the ability for it and others to effectively respond in Ituri.
When one province such as Ituri is on fire and with bigger humanitarian needs, it's also a question of capacity to deploy, capacity to get more resources to respond to another province, to another issue, to another crisis. And of course, there is no one actor that can respond to all of that alone.
These NGO officials and others say the only effective solution for DRC's conflicts is a combination of robust international assistance to keep the peace, along with an infusion of development to turn warring factions into stakeholders who then have a reason not to kill and destroy. Jeffrey Young, VOA News, Washington.
That report by Jeffrey Young brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with this song, Bo Free, by Afori Mposa. We've been listening to Afori Mposa with the song Bonri. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. What do you think about this show? Let us know. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Oh, the Abamingum, oh, the Abamingum, oh, the Abamingum.